Columbia Workshop presents the first performance of Irwin Shaw's new play, Supply and Demand. Mr. Shaw, author of the famous Bury the Dead, has been hailed as one of America's most brilliant younger playwrights. Supply and Demand is his first major work since Bury the Dead, and was written especially for radio. The play will be performed by the Actors Repertory Company, which originally produced Bury the Dead in New York. The workshop takes great pride in offering this significant play. Supply and Demand by Irwin Shaw.
It is Thanksgiving Eve, a bleak night along the New York waterfront. There are three freight cars drawn up along the dock. There are men working next to them. Steadily, without pause, they unload the freight cars of their contents.
Come in, boys!
Turkeys from Texas for the Thanksgiving trade. Rhythmically and steadily, they throw them one by one into the oily ebb tide of the East River, sliding out to the ocean.
Come in, boys!
Behind the picket fence, cutting the dock off from the street, stands a single figure picked out of the mist by the weak rays of the work lanterns below. An old man shuffles up to him out of the darkness.
Begging your pardon, mister. Could you spare a dime for an old bum who's been living on coffee and donuts?
I'm afraid not.
Just a dime, friend. I'm just trying to keep from starving. A dime.
I'm very sorry. Honestly, I'm sorry.
You don't know what it is to live off coffee and donuts and wondering when you can get even that. You're dressed fine. Your shoes are shined. You smoke cigars after dinner.
My friend, I haven't got a dime.
Huh? I beg your pardon. You never can tell nowadays, can you?
You never can tell.
We live in a funny age. Wouldn't you say so?
I'd say so.
All dressed up neat as a parson, shaved to the bone, and not one dime in your pocket.
Ghosts of vanished splendor. Now, I come down here every night. They throw food in almost every night. Carmichael and Platt, trucking and contracting. Dump them in, boys.
I asked them for one of those turkeys around 7 o'clock. They nearly had me arrested. Some people got no hearts. Ain't you found that out?
I've found it out.
Don't you think it's kind of funny? They're dumping all that good white meat and dark meat into the river?
I think it very funny. I come down here and laugh almost every night.
Well, I don't think it's that funny myself. They get 50 cents an hour for doing it. Like I said before, we live in a funny age. Why do you think they do it?
This is what's known as the working out of the law of supply and demand.
Huh?
A man called Adam Smith thought it up some time ago. Cut the supply lower than the demand, old Mr. Smith said, and up goes the price.
That seems logical, don't it? Supply and demand, eh?
Yes. If they tried to sell all those turkeys, the price would go down so far even a poor man could eat turkey for Thanksgiving.
So they go into the river. They think of everything these days, don't they?
They don't lose a trick these days. When it's not turkey, it's wheat. When it's not wheat, it's strawberry.
Strawberries. Imagine that. Strawberries. Into the river. Dessert for the flounders. Strawberries.
Adam Smith figured it all out. I've stood against this fence here and watched Carmichael and Platt toss in tons of food.
You enjoy it?
No.
You never can tell what people enjoy. Look at the movies.
I don't enjoy it one bit. The other night down here, I cried.
It's a queer way of spending your time. You ought to go on for something else, maybe.
I'm making a study of the situation, a kind of survey. I'm interested in the subject of food.
It's an interesting subject.
I spent 20 years teaching economics. You used to be able to teach economics out of books. Then one day it occurred to me you couldn't do that anymore.
Up, men, boy.
I wouldn't know. I can get along on 30 cents a day. That's all the economics I know.
I'm going to write a book, Real American Economics, by Theodore Koch.
I'll look for it.
There's only one real economics anymore. And to study that, you have to go from town to town. You've got to watch what people eat, how they cook their food, what they say as they eat it. Well, you see, I'm kind of crazy on the subject of food.
I don't blame you.
Up, men, boy.
Food's the important thing. That's what I found out. Meat, potatoes, milk and eggs. That's what the country's built on.
I never saw it that way before. It sounds reasonable.
I have an idea. Every baby ought to be fed. Every woman. Every man. Thick slices of meat. Fresh bread. Sweet butter. Milk with the cream all yellow on top of it.
My Lord.
Every man, I said. Every baby. Every woman.
It sounds like a nice idea.
Food's a wonderful thing. But it's a terrible thing, too. The whole race's destiny is tied up in food. Bread and butter and green vegetables. It's a kind of religion. When food's wasted, when people starve, when markets become monsters the way they are today, then your whole civilization is rocking.
Come in, boys.
When one child goes hungry as wheat's being burned, men are walking along the edge of madness.
I believe you, so help me, I believe you.
I've seen with my own eyes. There was Walt Sloan, who lived in Nevada and grew cantaloupes and raised pigs. He couldn't make any money out of raising cantaloupes. Walt couldn't. So he used to feed his cantaloupes to the pigs. He used to talk to them. To his pigs.
Here you are, my friends. A nice fresh batch of cantaloupe. Sweet as a lady's smile. Firm pink meat. Fit for kings and queens. Eat hearty. Don't be bashful, friends. Dig in. There's plenty more where these come from. I didn't take even a half dozen to market. Not six. Go on, have some more. Supply and demand, the papers say. I've got the supply, you've got the demand, friend. Let me tell you something, friends. You're not plain ordinary pigs, not by a long shot. There are a lot of fine people in every town between the oceans that can't afford cantaloupe more than once a month. Here you are just pushing it down the way a man might take coffee in the morning, not giving it another thought. Just as easy. Just like bankers and movie actors. People think it's queer my talking to you. My wife's been going around saying I've turned crazy from my reverses, but they don't look at things as clear as I do. If only you could talk, I bet you'd have some darn smart things to say. Well, what do you think of the political situation, my friend? What do you got to say on foreign affairs? What do you think about our coming out of the Depression? All I can say is there can't be so awful much of a depression if Walt Sloan's pigs are eating cantaloupe. It almost seems a shame to keep you in this dirty old sty. Gentlemen, feeders like you ought to be sitting at table, surrounded by heavy napery and silver-handed cutlery. Yeah. Ain't so funny as it sounds, my friend. After all, you're getting to be very valuable animals with every bite you take. Now, if a man put 6 months of his life at hard labor into building something, he'd make darn sure it wasn't left in the rain to spoil. That's normal rate, my friend. Those cantaloupes should have brought $1,000 at least. Well, now you got $1,000 inside you, all neat and squaw. There's a lot more to you than a sight of the neighbors Loretta has over for an evening. If they can come into my parlor, by gad, so can you. Come on, my friend. Out of the mud, come on there. Come on, hoist yourself, hoist yourself. Come on now, that's it. Right on through the gate. No more mud for my pigs, no siree. Not for Walt Sloan's pigs. Right on through the door now, friend. Into the parlor. Make yourselves at home.
Walt Sloan, what's happening here? Don't let those pigs in here. Get out, dude. Get out.
Don't you kick those big Loretta. They're friends of mine. Just settle down, friend. She won't do it no more.
There are people here.
I see them. Hello, Doc. Isn't there enough doing to keep you busy of an afternoon over to the asylum?
I was just passing by.
Loretta called you last night, eh?
No, he just dropped in.
I ain't making any complaints, but if you need Doc there and his two friends to tell you whether I'm crazy or not after you've been living with me for 20 years, I'm just sorry for you, that's all. Oh, don't mind that big fella, Doc. He's very friendly.
Oh, Sloan, those things are filthy. Now get them out of my parlor.
Maybe you're right, Loretta. Come to think of it, my friends aren't as clean as they might be. Get me a washcloth, Loretta, and that big basin from the kitchen.
What are you going to do?
Dandy up the pigs a little so they won't feel out of place in here.
You're joking now, Walt, aren't you?
Joking? Me? I'm as serious as the devil. They'll be the cleanest hand-washed pigs any lady ever let into a parlor. Have some more cantaloupe, friend. Come on, have some cantaloupe.
He's dangerous, Doctor. I told you.
Now, Walt, if you'll just take it easy and rest a little, maybe. And maybe forget about your pig for a couple of weeks.
Loretta, well, what is that, Basin?
I'm scared to live in the same house with him.
Now, Walt, drive those pigs out of here and come in and we'll have a sensible talk.
Doc, you eat cantaloupe much?
Not much.
Why not?
Well, the asylum doesn't pay very high wages, you know.
You can't eat cantaloupe, but my pigs can. And you want me to throw them out? I think I'd rather throw you out first. These pigs are smarter than most folks. When there's food around, they eat it. These pigs are going to stay right here as our guests till they die off of old age. A man's got the right to choose the company of his equals. What do you say to that, my friend? Come on, take another help.
Get out of here! Get out of here!
Don't you kick, my friend, Loretta.
Get out!
All right, now you get out of the house. Get out with your doctors and your telephone calls and leave me here where I can have a quiet talk with my friends when I want to. Get out. Get out.
All right, boys, take him. Come on now, Walt. We want you to come with us.
No, you don't. I don't have to be locked up in any asylum. I'm not the crazy one. This is 1937, and pigs eat cantaloupe. Is that my fault? I'm not the crazy one.
I could see what Walt Sloan was driving at.
He's still in the asylum, Walt is. Maybe his pigs still eat cantaloupe. Maybe it's lucky. Everybody isn't as good a farmer as old Walt Sloan or the pigs that get everything.
That's a pretty funny notion. You're full of little jokes, Professor. You don't look it, but there's a lot of fun to you. Do you know any more?
There was a girl I used to know here in New York City. Pretty she was, young and bright, with her hair combed back from her forehead.
I've seen them. The city's full of them, walking around on their high heels. I'd like to know a girl like that.
Her name was Jane Stewart, and she wanted to be an actress. She lived in a little 2x4 furnished room on 17th Street with a friend of hers.
I know the neighborhood. It's no place for a pretty girl.
Well, now, my next-to-last pair of stockings are washed. Now I can sit back and wait for Prince Charming.
What time does Prince Charming do, Jane?
Prince Charming gets here in exactly 2 minutes, Francis, in his little Packard. Never early, never late. That's Bonnie Prince Charming.
Where's he taking you tonight?
To dinner at Soter's. Wonderful, Prince Charming. You get steaks this thick at Soter's. I ate there once upon a time when I had a job. And that was that long run I was in. 3.5 weeks, remember?
What are you going to do after that?
Well, Prince Charming's going to ask me to marry him. Oysters, steak, grilled mushrooms, baked potatoes, salad, eclair, coffee, and will you be my wife?
You're not going to marry that guy, are you?
Well, that's a lot of food, isn't it?
He'll take you back to Squeedunk with him. And the only acting you'll do will be for the Ladies Auxiliary of the Friday Evening Poker Society when they put on their spring social.
He says he has a good cook. I wouldn't trust Prince Charming on anything else, but when he says food is good, it's good.
Jane, my girl, you're light in the head.
I had coffee and toast at 10 this morning. And I'm hungry now. Can you imagine how hungry I can get waiting for next season? And I've got what you call a flying head start toward starving next season.
Listen, you're not going to marry this geezer, are you?
I'm getting very tired of coffee and toast and cream cheese sandwiches and 40-cent dinners, dessert extra.
That isn't important.
But it's important to me. I'm a big girl, and I was brought up in a family that ate meat twice a day.
Listen, you want to act, don't you?
Well, the thoughts occurred to me.
You can be a swell actor. There's a lot to you.
I've got a fine appetite. I bet I've got the best appetite on the New York stage.
Listen here, wise guy. It takes time. Maybe a year. Maybe 2.
I didn't think the cream cheese would hold out. A Prince Charming right on the nose.
Listen, you've got to promise me
now
something.
He's waiting, and he doesn't like to wait. People should be on time. That's his motto. His family's always on time. His mother and sister operate just like a railroad.
Shut up. And promise me you won't say yes tonight.
I'm awfully hungry, Francis. I can't wait until I get at that steak.
Promise me.
You don't want me to collapse with a steak just 15 minutes away, do you?
Promise me you'll say no. You don't want to go to Squeedo.
All right. But if he says it's cooked good, it's cooked good. Well.
That's the first word you've said since we got here.
Oh, is it? I'm sorry. I've been busy. Oh, that was a good steak.
There's some more here.
Well, I've had so much. You sure you don't want it yourself, Alan?
I'm sure. Here.
Oh, I'm not really hungry, you know. Just a nibble.
You don't want any more potatoes, do you?
Well, maybe just one more. I certainly seem to have brought my appetite along tonight, don't I? Well, there we are. The plate's full again. You must be trying to make me fat, but steak is steak.
Jane, I want to talk to you seriously tonight. Tomorrow, I'm leaving for home. Jane, did you hear me?
I'm so sorry. This bone is something of a problem. What did you say?
Well, what I wanted to say is that I've grown to like you. In fact, I might say that I'm very fond of you. You're the kind of girl that I've always wanted to know.
Dessert now, sir?
No, the young lady's not...
Oh, ready. Yes, I am. A chocolate eclair, please, and milk.
Nothing for me.
Yes.
Well, what were you saying, Alan?
Well, I've been wanting to tell you about my hometown, Greenhead. Isn't that a beautiful name?
It's just lovely.
It's a sleepy little town. You just love it after New York, so peaceful. Why, sometimes in winter, the whole town gets snowed in for weeks at a time.
And that must be so much fun.
The acre.
Oh, here, right in front of me. Did you ever see anything more beautiful, Alan? Of course, New York's a nice place, too. Sometimes you can even get snowed in here. I like New York. Ever since I was a kid, I promised myself I'd wind up here.
They'd like you in Green Hill, too. I know it. Oh, you'd get caught right up. Parties, bridge. Why, they even put on a play at the high school every spring.
It sounds very nice.
Jane, there's a question that I want to ask you. I'm going back to Green Hill tomorrow, and I want you to come with me. Will you come?
Well, I hate to finish this eclair. It's so good.
Jane, I mean that I want you to marry me.
I know. It's very nice. Would you think I was terrible if I asked some more dessert?
Well, go ahead. Wait,
another eclair, please.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you think your cook could make eclairs? They're hard, I bet.
My cook can make anything. Well, you're a funny girl talking about all these things. Maybe you're embarrassed because I asked you so suddenly.
I get embarrassed very easily.
Will you marry me?
Well, this is the first time I've ever had two desserts, one right after another.
We'll be very happy together, Jane. We'll come to New York twice a year, go to the shows.
The shows? Did you ever go to a first night, Alan? Your whole inside seems to boil over before the curtain. Will we eat in this restaurant all the time?
If you want.
Oysters and steak and mushrooms and potatoes and eclairs.
Anything you want. Will you marry me?
Can I have all the eclairs I want?
All the eclairs you want. Will you marry me?
Of course. Oh, waiter, the eclair goes here.
She's in Green Hill now. I saw her last summer, and she just sits and looks at her husband. I don't think they say 10 words to each other in a week.
Open in, boys.
Still, she didn't do so bad. If that cook was really good.
Those are the stories I want to put in my book of American economics. What food means to young people and old people. What food means to a man and his wife and his children.
They'd make people think twice before they toss turkeys into the river. Those stories would.
There's a saying I'm going to use as a tag in front of my book. If everybody ate at the same table, nobody'd go hungry.
I've heard it. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if it wouldn't be so.
There's rich food for all of us, stored up in this tremendous warehouse of America. Tender meat, tasty green stuffs and nuts and fruit.
Maybe you oughtn't to talk about it. It makes me sad.
It ought to make us all sad. It made me sad to think of it when I went into homes where families were trying to get along on relief menus.
Government boys!
There was the Conklin family. Mrs. Conklin just couldn't seem to stretch the 90 cents a day far enough to keep her husband, herself, and her two children alive. So they sent a dietitian from the relief office down to show her how to do it.
When you buy bread, Mrs. Conklin, buy bread that's at least a day old. It's cheaper and you can cut more slices out of it. But remember, too, that if you add a can of water to a can of evaporated milk, it has the same food value as a quart pot of milk.
Larry.
Are you listening to me, Mrs. Conklin?
Yes, ma'am, of course, ma'am. Only Larry's harmonica. Larry, stop playing that thing.
Well, I like to keep something in my mouth.
Oh, you make too much noise.
Can you shut up? I'll play my harmonica.
Be quiet, Larry. Pardon me, ma'am, I'm listening now. The children are a mite nervous. Something's come over them the last year.
Well, I guess that covers everything. You have the list I gave you of what you can buy.
Yes, ma'am.
It's not much, I know. But it's balanced. I suppose that's important. If it's balanced, the most important thing. So you see, you can get along on 90 cents a day.
I guess so.
Only sudden expenses keep coming up, like Conklin's needing a dime for car fare to look for a job when he hears of one.
Oh, I know, Mrs. Conklin, but you've got to control every penny.
That sounds like the way to do it. Control every penny. Yes, ma'am. That's what I'll have to try to do from now on.
I'll be around next week to see how you're getting along.
Is she leaving us anything to eat, Ma?
Oh,
what'd she come here for? She didn't bring us anything to eat.
Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am, but Larry's a little outspoken.
Oh, that's all right. If I could, I would bring something. Good night.
Good night.
Larry, you've got to hold your tongue.
Seems to me she might have bought us some caramels, at least.
Why don't you stop there?
Well, I like to keep something in my mouth.
What have we got for supper, Mom?
Your father's getting some beans and salt pork.
I wish he'd hurry. A harmonica's all right, but you can't chew on it all the
time. Your pop will be right along now.
You got something to eat till he comes, Mom.
Here I am. The breadwinner's home. Well, why don't you say hello to your husband and father? What's new with the Conklin?
That lady Di Chicken was here, Pop. She balls Mark, so you don't feed us right.
There's a lot in what she says, son. I don't like your cooking, Mrs. Conklin. It's flat. I didn't like the way you prepared caviar and truffle. The last time you served the champagne, it wasn't cold enough.
Where have you been, John?
Down to the club discussing the tax situation. Taxes are too high, we decided. The man can hardly keep pins out of his second million.
Where's the pork and beans, John?
Pork and beans? Oh, let me sit down, will you? Your poor old father have a chair to rest his old bones in, Peggy. Your poor old father...
What happened to the pork and beans, John?
Pork and beans are bad for you. Heavy. No good for growing children. Didn't the lady dietitian tell you that?
What happened to the 90 cents, John?
From now on, my children will eat only the selected tongues of hummingbirds. My sweet, hungry children.
What happened to the 90 cents?
I spent it. I spent the 90 cents.
John.
I walked into a bar and I said whiskey. I said it three times and there's the 90 cents. You can't get good whiskey anymore. For 30 cents, they scrape it off all our machinery.
John, you shouldn't have done it.
I was walking along trying to figure out what was going to become of us. Of you, Lucy, and Peggy, and me, and Larry. Me turning into an old man with 90 cents in my pocket. And I just couldn't think about it anymore. So I went into a bar. Bernardo was a happy man. Isn't that worth 90 cents, Lucy?
Maybe to you. Ask Larry what he thinks about it.
I want my supper. Ma, where's supper?
Isn't it worth 90 cents to you, Larry, to make your father a happy man for an hour? For an hour, I forgot you and Peggy and your mother. Wasn't it worth it?
I want my supper.
Shut up.
Yes, sir.
Lucy, stop looking at me like that.
I haven't got anything else to do, John.
Mom, I'm going to sleep. I have the most wonderful dreams when I sleep. Men in raccoon coats take me to big restaurants, and I wear an evening dress with the back cut on the heel.
Stop talking and get out of here.
Good night, Mom. Don't worry, Pop. Good night.
There was a time when you made $40 a week, and we used to have meat four times a week. I remember it clearly. White tablecloths every night. The kids sat and laughing when you'd give them a taste of beer and they'd get the foam all over. I remember it clearly.
Larry, put that thing down or I'll give you a licking you'll never forget.
I like to keep something in my mouth.
Don't play that thing around here anymore. It's bad enough without that.
I want my...
Shut up!
I feel awful sick inside. If only I had a little pork and beans. Pop, Mom said you were going to bring home pork and beans.
I thought you'd have shut up, didn't I? I'll beat the living daylights out of you. You say another word.
All I want is my supper.
John, what did you do that for?
What did I do? He kept on, didn't he? I... Don't cry, Larry. Don't cry, baby. Please don't cry.
I'm sorry, Pop. You keep on crying. I can't help it.
Please, baby, please. Play a harmonica. Go ahead. Play a harmonica.
I don't feel like playing, Pop.
Play a harmonica, I said. Please.
Don't cry, Pop.
Play!
And they are still throwing turkeys into the river.
That don't seem right. Even though those are their own turkeys.
It isn't right. It's as sinful as stealing, as wrong as murder. They are stealing from old man Sloan and Jane Stewart. They're murdering the Conklins down there, throwing food to the fishes. They're robbing millions of people down there, killing millions of others. And if there was any justice along this river, they'd all be hanged by morning. Our friends down there.
You ought to tell them.
Stop them, boys!
I will. It's about time somebody told them. Hey there! Listen to me! I'm coming down there! Listen to me! Stop throwing that food away! You're throwing away the lives of my friends! You're tossing the happiness of my neighbors to the bottom of the ocean! You've got no right to do that!
No right! Hey, what's going on here?
I'm talking for Walt Sloan and James Stewart and the Conklins. They're friends of mine. They're Americans who don't eat.
They're all nice people, too. Nicer than anybody here.
Well, what have they got to do with us?
They've got something to do with everybody. You can't forget them. You can't. Throwing your turkeys away. Rich men sitting down to their dinners can't forget them. Men working in factories can't forget them. Or farmers, or congressmen, or judges on the bench.
Ah, the old guy's batty.
They're all here now, whether you can see them or not. And they are saying, you can't throw food to the bottom of the sea while we're around and hungry.
I don't see nobody.
I can see them as plain as day. Walt Sloan, Jane Stewart, and the kid with a harmonica.
You can't, that's all. You can't. If I was God and I saw you here tonight doing what you're doing, I'd blast you all with a single thunderbolt for your sin. You can't! Can't!
Say, look here, old man. When did you eat last?
I ate Monday.
2 days ago, huh? I thought so. Well, you're light in the head. That's what's wrong with you. How would you like to eat?
I would like to eat. Me too. Just coffee. Donuts.
You can make a buck apiece here tonight. Now, we want to get rid of these turkeys by 10 o'clock.
You mean you want us to throw the turkeys in?
That's it. A buck for each of you.
But it's wrong. It's wrong.
You want to eat, don't you?
Yes. I've got to eat. Where do I work?
You and him stand right here. Just take them out of the car and heave them out as fast as you can. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Dump them in, boys. Dump them in.
Dump them in, boy. Dump them in.
Columbia Workshop has presented Irwin Shaw's new play, Supply and Demand. It was written especially for radio. Worthington Minor, renowned for his work as a director in the Legitimate Theater, directed the dialogue and staging. Irving Reese supervised the production and radio direction. It was enacted by members of the Actors' Repertory Company who first produced Bury the Dead, the play which won Mr. Shaw national acclaim as one of America's most promising playwrights. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.